Family dinner, Sunday brunch, Taco Tuesday, working lunch, champagne toast, handful of rice, piece of candy, one red apple, soup and sandwiches, pretzels and beer, steak and potatoes, wine and brie, raw food, fast food, seafood, soul food, state dinner, wedding dinner, birthday party, wake, potluck, picnic, coffee hour, cake. I'm talking about spiritual practices around food, eating or not eating. Spiritual practices are those activities we engage in to help us advance and deepen the spiritual dimension of our lives. Activities that invite us to contemplate and form more certain answers to the spiritual questions of identity, purpose, and meaning. Who am I? What should I do? And why does it matter? A spiritual practice is a practice, meaning it's an activity that we engage in regularly, probably on a schedule, like every day or every Sunday. And a spiritual practice is holistic, intentional, and ecstatic. Holistic, meaning it involves all of our being, mind, body, and spirit, mental, physical, and emotional. Intentional, meaning that we undertake the practice conscious of our spiritual purpose. And ecstatic, meaning ecstasy in the spiritual sense, that through this practice I am developing that part of my being that's able to experience losing my ego self-identification and feeling myself at one with all of existence. We sometimes think of spiritual practices as very specialized, narrow spiritual activities like praying or meditating or worshiping at a home altar. But many kinds of activities can be spiritual practices. And one of my purposes in this sermon series is to help you find a spiritual practice that fits with your personality, your interests, and your theology. People have spiritual practices of painting, or cycling, or knitting. Nearly anything can be a practice, but not everything automatically is. A spiritual practice is for you, spiritual, and a practice that is holistic, intentional, and ecstatic. Now, everyone eats. Most of the time, eating is not a spiritual practice for most people, but many spiritual practices do involve food. Ritual meals, ritual foods, eating or not eating. Think of the ritual meal at the center of Christian worship, the Eucharist or communion, as Sandy Kroll talked about earlier this morning, a ritual recreation of the Last Supper with Jesus and his disciples, also called the Lord's Supper. Now, that famous meal is described in all four of the Gospels in the Bible. Here it is in Luke. After taking the cup, he gave thanks and said, "Take this and divide it among you, for I tell you, I will not drink again from the fruit of the vine until the kingdom of God comes." And he took bread, gave thanks, and broke it, and gave it to them, saying, "This is my body, given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." Because Jesus said, "Do this in remembrance of me," Christians recognize this passage as a commandment to reenact the Last Supper meal ritually as part of Christian worship. The word Eucharist is a Greek word. It combines the word "you," which means well or good, with the word charis, which means grace. So Eucharist means to give graciously, or as we might say, thanksgiving. The Eucharist is a thanksgiving meal every week at the altar. So is it a spiritual practice? Well, yes, it's spiritual. It is a regular weekly practice, or more or less often, depending on your faith tradition. Holistic, right, in that the mind and the body and the spirit are all engaged at once. Intentional, Yes, the Christian knows exactly why they are coming to the altar, and they prepare deliberately in several ways to take communion, and it is ecstatic. Well, at least for some, potentially. The Last Supper in the Gospels is also a Passover meal. It's a Seder. The Seder in the Jewish faith is a ritual remembrance of the Exodus story. Seder, the word, means order or procedure in Hebrew, referring to the ritual way in which the meal is conducted and the story is told according to the Haggadah. So here's the story. Despite a series of plagues demonstrating God's power and inflicting hardship on the Egyptian people, the Pharaoh refuses to release the Hebrew people from their captivity. Finally, on the evening of Passover, God plans to kill the firstborn male of every family, human and livestock too. But he will spare the Hebrew people if they sacrifice a lamb and mark the doors of their homes with the lamb's blood. The horrible night arrives. The agony and the anger of the Egyptian people is so great that Moses leads his people to flee. They have no time to wait for the bread to rise. They escape into the desert. So the Seder plate contains a collection of symbolic foods representing the elements of the story. There is a matzah cracker, which is a symbol of the hurry in which they were forced to leave. There's salt water and bitter herbs for the tears and the bitterness of the forced labor. There's a lamb shank to remember the sacrificial lamb. So Christian communion is a miniature Passover meal. The remembrance of Jesus' sacrifice, who's called the Lamb of God, his blood poured out to mark us for life and escape from the bondage of sin, and his and the bread, Jesus' body, the wine, his blood. Now today we are in the midst of a different Jewish holy time. We are in the midst of the High Holy Days, which is the period from Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, or the head of the year, literally Rosh Hashanah, to Yom Kippur, which is the Day of Atonement. The High Holy Days are a time for self-reflection and honest appraisal. What happened in the past year? Where did I fall short of the ideal person that I strive to be and the expectations that others in the community have for me? For what do I need forgiveness? And who can forgive me? A specific person that I've wronged, or for more general sins, only God? The High Holy Days end with a recommitment to be the people that we are called to be, and a prayer that God will write our names in the Book of Life for one more year. Yom Kippur is marked not with a dinner, but with a different kind of food ritual, a fast, so there's nothing to eat. The religious purpose is to redirect one's attention from the physical to the spiritual, from sundown on Tuesday this coming week through sundown on Wednesday. The observant Jew will partake of a complete 24-hour fast, no eating, no drinking, including water, and also a fast from other actions which might draw focus to the body, like bathing or wearing overly comfortable or fancy clothes or putting on perfume or lotion or having sex. Lent in the Christian calendar involves a 40-day fast, not a complete fast, fortunately, but meat eating is forbidden and a general giving up of bodily pleasures. Parallel to Yom Kippur, the spiritual task of Lent is to contemplate one's sins, ask for forgiveness, and make oneself ready and worthy for the promise of new life that comes at Easter for Christians. The Ramadan fast is the Islamic equivalent of Yom Kippur and Lent, 28 days of fasting during daylight hours only, broken each evening and again each morning if you get up early enough. Religious rules about eating or not eating is a common way to redirect one's thoughts from the material to the spiritual. Because everyone eats every day, if you aren't eating a certain food or you're skipping a meal that others are engaging in, or your food must be prepared or blessed in a certain way, you have a very strong and regular reminder of who you are and what value you are upholding, and to recommit by an act of self-will to the spiritual purpose that's justifying your food choice. So Mormons don't drink alcohol or use any form of tobacco or stimulants like caffeine, all according to a teaching from Joseph Smith called the Word of Wisdom. Seventh-day Adventists are primarily vegetarian, following a vision from one of their founders, Ellen White. If they do eat meat, Seventh-day Adventists follow the same kosher rules as Jews do. Kosher rules are extensive. You probably know that observant Jews don't eat pork or shellfish, but there are dozens of other kosher rules applying not merely to forbid specific foods, but also how permissible foods are farmed and raised, harvested, slaughtered, stored, and served. Halal and haram are the Islamic equivalent of kosher and non-kosher, meaning permissible and forbidden. Now, perhaps you already have a spiritual practice around food. Perhaps you say a prayer of thanks before each meal. When I first moved out of my family's home and my parents still lived in Santa Monica, I and a friend of mine had a regular date to have Sunday dinner at my parents' house. I wasn't thinking in spiritual terms at the time, but it was a kind of a spiritual practice. It was regular, holistic, and ecstatic, if my mother made her famous meatloaf. And it was spiritual, in the sense that it was at the service of the values of friendship, community, and family. Many Unitarian Universalists have made food rules for ourselves, similar to kosher laws, although not enforced by the community. You probably have some food rules yourself, although you may not have thought about your food rules in a spiritual way. But for health reasons, there may be some foods that you don't eat. A lot of folks who aren't Mormon also don't drink alcohol or smoke or avoid coffee. Perhaps you have a known allergy or a disease like celiac disease. Or perhaps you just notice that you feel better when you refrain from certain foods. I stay away from milk and ice cream because I have a lactose intolerance. That's one of my food rules. Or there might be some food that you deliberately do eat because you know they're good for your health, even if you don't like them. Searching the certified organic label on fruits and vegetables at the grocery store is much the same as searching for the certified kosher label. For ethical reasons, you might follow food rules like purchasing fair trade products whenever you can, or you might choose a vegetarian or vegan diet for the ethical reason of reducing animal suffering. Because you care about the environment and climate change, you might choose to eat locally sourced food whenever possible to reduce the carbon produced through shipping on trucks and boats. Or you might choose to not eat beef because of the impact that raising cattle has on land use, growing grain for feed, and the methane that cows produce through their digestion. Or you might be conscious about reducing food waste and composting whatever you can. So could your eating choices be a spiritual practice? Well, they might if you choose to make them so. Making food choices based on reasons like health or ethics or fellowship or a justice concern like climate change all engage with the spiritual questions of who am I, what should I do, and why does it matter? And then being intentional about spiritual purpose is one of the factors that recreates an activity that we all already do anyway into a spiritual practice. And that brings me where I want to end this morning. So we've been talking so far about the kinds of spiritual practices that people do together with others in the context of their spiritual community. Spiritual practices like worship, or congregational singing, or eating a ritual meal, or fasting as a group while spending the day at temple. But eating is also an individual activity, so you can make a spiritual practice of eating while you're alone, just yourself and the plate in front of you. This food, in this way, at this time. So now, for the next several weeks, I'm going to turn from spiritual practices that we do together in spiritual community to individual spiritual practices. The spiritual practices that are most often done alone and in private. So we'll pick that up next week.